Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Rick returns next Sunday. The election of Donald J. Trump has released a wave of energy from ordinary people, many of whom have never been politically active before. Collectively, they form what is now called the Resistance. With us today in studio are Joanna Lott. Joanna is a voice teacher and speech pathologist and has lived in Charlottesville for 2.5 years. She has never been particularly active in politics before, but all that changed on election day 2016. Soon after that, she stumbled onto a small group of activists, all whom happened to be scientists. Together, they became Seaville Community, the group that planned and executed the March for Science in Charlottesville in April. And Nathan Moore. Nathan has lived in Charlottesville for the last 6 years and says he's been a lefty for a lot longer than that. But it's only in the last 8 months or so that he has stepped into the political organizing in our community. Since the day after the election last November, Nathan has been on the steering committee of Together Seaville. Together is a grassroots group that works to build political power to ensure that everyone in our community is safe, secure, heard, and has access to resources. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Dan. Nice to be here.
Before we get on to the meat of our topic today, which is everyday people and the resistance, I thought we should talk for a few minutes about the Klan rally yesterday. Joanna, I understand you were there. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I was there. I actually was very undecided right up until the last minute about whether to go to one of the other alternative events or to go to the rally. But in the end, I went to the rally, and I feel like that was the place to be. It was, in my view, very peaceful, at least from the corner that I stood on, apparently got somehow out of hand by the end, or at least some reports say. It was amazing to see probably upwards of 1,000 people there to protest against the hate that the Klan stands for and espouses, and see such a small group of the KKK there shouting their, you know, white power and all of their hateful slogans. And we made enough noise to basically drown them out. And from where I stood, it was nonviolent. And I felt like we had done something very good when I left. But I left before the tear gas.
So the story went national this morning. The New York Times carried a story, and they portrayed the protesters as taunting the police, bottle throwing, and so on. But did you see anything like that?
I saw nothing like that, but I'll also say I was standing behind a lot of people and couldn't see much. I know that it took a long time for the police to feel that it was safe enough to bring the Klan in or at least make a path for them. But again, I couldn't see why or how we were obstructing the path. But I have seen footage since then of what the police did. I have not seen the actual throwing of water bottles or apple cores or any kind of violence from the protesters towards the KKK or the police.
And were you there for the Klan's presentation, in air quotes?
I was there. I couldn't see much. From what I could see was waving of Confederate flags and holding up of hate-filled signs. We couldn't hear what they were saying, which was our purpose. We planned to be very loud and basically just shouted Black Lives Matter and racists go home and boo very loudly. And I am a pacifist. I'm nonviolent. And I had no intention of being violent or participating in anything that was violent. When I did see one man who was in the crowd. He was not dressed or in, you know, he didn't seem to be participating in what the Klan was doing. And he was walking out from where the Klan had been towards me. And I saw that he had a Confederate flag on his jacket. And I had a moment, I have to say, where I wanted to kind of get in his face, but I did not. I just yelled boo really loudly for what it's worth. And he walked past me with, you know, none the worse for wear.
Right. Nathan, were you there?
I was not there. My wife was there as a street medic. I was actually home with the kids of several families that were all attending, so my kids and others as well. I did certainly follow it on the live stream video and saw everybody's photos and accounts after the fact. A friend of mine was actually one of the ones who was gassed at the end there. I don't really fully understand why that happened the way it did. I think it's interesting, though, there's always a narrative of this sort that, like, protesters got unruly, a few wouldn't disperse, whatever, and that then justifies all kinds of things that have tended to happen at this kind of demonstration. I don't know the specifics of this case. I just know that it's a convenient narrative for you know, sort of clearing the police of any wrongdoing. So we'll see.
I read somewhere that most of the aggressive actions by the police were by the Virginia State troopers. Is that true, Joanna?
I'm not sure about that. That's what I've heard as well, and I don't know whether I've heard that from, you know, Facebook or from any of the articles I've read. But the police presence was just the sight of the police presence to me was terrifying. The number of police, the riot gear that they wore. I don't know whether that was the state police or not, but it was hard to know who they were protecting. When I first saw them, I thought, wow, they are really worried that the Klan is armed and that something may happen. But now that I hear what happened after I left, I wonder, you know, who were they really there to protect?
Right. And was there any sense of gun violence at any point while you were there?
There was not. Uh-huh. I saw no weapons. I heard no talk of weapons until afterwards. And then I did hear that there were people in the crowd who had large knives and other weapons that were visible, and that they're, you know, it being an open carry state, they were open carrying. And but I saw none of it. I was with a group that had formed, had left the church that was the safe space church, and had actually followed a group of clergy, and it, you know, they had been singing and being very peaceful. So I saw none of that.
I want to talk briefly, not so much about gun violence or sort of police interactions, all that kind of thing, but about this photo that I saw that my wife took. Mm-hmm. We posted it to the Together Seville Facebook page of a black man holding his arms up just to, you know, sort of prevent any kind of misconstrual that he's reaching for a weapon, because black men are stereotyped as being a threat, and so he didn't want to give anybody an excuse to do violence against him while he was confronting the Klan. And he stood there, you know, passionate, with his arms above his head for a very long period of time. The photo just captures so much of, I think, the spirit of that. There were a lot of sort of, you know, white on white, you know, confrontations and aggressions, and not physical aggressions, but you know, vocal. None of the white folks felt compelled to put their hands above their heads. And I think that sort of speaks a little bit to what we're talking about here, is that there are such structural issues and deep-rooted stereotyped issues that can become really life and death, especially when it's about something like the Klan, with its history of terroristic methods and intimidation and killings of people of color.
Mm-hmm. We're going to talk a lot about the resistance in just a moment, but as a kind of a segue into that, I'm wondering if either of you feel or believe that this kind of display, what the Klan did yesterday, has become more emboldened during the Trump era?
I think definitely.
I would say that, you know, as we learn more about the far right, the Klan is the Klan. The Klan's like your you know, weird old uncle's, you know, organization, where they kind of come out from under their rock and they make some noise and they wear their hoods and then they get back under their rock and you know, they're there. But, you know, I saw my first Klan rally in my hometown when I was 16 years old. You know, so that was 2 decades ago. It followed basically the same pattern. The Klan does its thing. What I do find to be emboldening a lot amongst these groups lately, though, is and this really actually portends something a little bit more disconcerting for August 12th, when the Unite the Right, alt-right, or whatever you want to call it, rally is happening with Richard Spencer and Jason Kessler and those types of folks that are all coming together in downtown Charlottesville. And really, that's a much more sort of young person's white supremacy. That's a more you know, angry young white men who are urban and have a veneer of intellectual justification for what they're doing. I mean, it's all wrong, incredibly wrong. Mm-hmm. But they find a type of community around hatred in these groups, or around whatever, white identity, however they want to frame it. But it's basically saying that people of color aren't okay in this community. And so long story short, I do find that type of organizing on the far right to have been very much emboldened. Plus all the sort of day-to-day racist thoughts and comments and aggressions toward people of color and women and people of different faiths. It's been, yeah, we're living in some pretty crazy times. I mean, we still do have a lot of protection in a place like Charlottesville. There's, you know, strength in numbers, and we can talk more about how we're organizing some of that. But yeah, it's been emboldened.
11 minutes past the hour. Joanna Lott from Seaville Community and Nathan Moore from Together Seaville with us this morning in studio to talk about the resistance. You're listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Just one more thought before we move on, and that is, do you think whose message was the strongest message after yesterday's rally, the Klan's or the protesters?
I think, without a doubt, the protesters was the strongest message, and I think that it wasn't just at the rally, but it was at all of the other organized events that occurred, and the numbers of people that showed up to those events so far outnumbered the few idiots that came and spoke their hatred at the park.
Yeah, I don't even know what the Klan's message was exactly. I mean, it got so drowned out, so overwhelmed, mm-hmm. and that's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm. Great. All right, so let's move on to why we're here today. The topic, as I mentioned earlier, of our program today is Everyday People in the Resistance. So I'd like to begin by asking each of you how you came to be a part of the Resistance. Who wants to go first?
You go ahead, Joanne.
Okay. Well, you know, I really didn't know what to do with myself after the election. I had never even felt anything like the fear and terror and dismay that I felt on election night and afterwards. I didn't know what to do with it. I knew that acting, you had to do something. And I didn't want it to feel like it went nowhere. Like, you know, I had done things in the past, like knitting for refugees, which you can do at home and nobody sees you and it's anonymous and you feel like you're doing something good, but no, you're not showing up. But I felt like showing up had to be part of what I did. And luckily the Women's March came around and was strategically organized throughout the country. Charlottesville had its own Women's March that I went to. And after that, the 10 actions in 100 days is what made the huddle that I went to and found my people happen. So that was the Women's March that came up with that idea. The great thing about their activities is that it's very structured, and you come up with talking points and ideas, and you realize you have more to offer than you think you do. I happened to stumble into this group that was all scientists, and I'm not a scientist. I think that I work in a field that where you have to have some scientific knowledge and understanding, but it's a stretch to say that I'm a scientist. But it was obvious to us within the first hour of meeting that what we needed to do was find out if someone was already planning a march in Charlottesville for science, and if not, we needed to make it happen, and that's what we did.
Nathan?
For my part, I had been involved as a sort of political organizer, political activist in years past, when I was younger. Sort of, you know, frankly, I've used the phrase before, I kind of, you know, dozed off a little bit of that during the Obama administration, mm-hmm. both for personal reasons. I had small children, et cetera, but also, you know, things weren't terrible. I mean, I had complaints, sort of voiced my complaints to friends and all that, but I did not do much organizing politically during that time. But, you know, there's a thing, right? So I'm in my mid-30s. In the 2000 election, there was I felt like, okay, you know, I don't really like either there's problems with some of the candidates with Gore and Bush, but, you know, like I really don't think the country will be okay with Bush. And there were actually severe problems with Bush in office. Later on, you know, there were some other elections though, where it's like, you know, I didn't want the Republicans to win. I wanted Obama to win. But I thought the country would be more or less okay if, you know, say Romney had been elected. This time around, I really did not feel like the country would be okay. And it turns out that prediction is bearing out. the morning after the election, like a lot of people, was sort of in an acute state of shock. Like, how did this happen? Right. And so I came back to some of what I know about organizing, some of what I know about power, and that's that power comes from organized people. And so we need to organize the liberals and the progressives and the socialists and the radicals and all these people that have some shared opposition to the Trump administration. And we need to do that in a way that that pools people together and resources together so that we can fight in some common strategy. A million different groups and tactics and organizations doing their priorities, but hopefully to be some kind of coalition that can pull together. That was like this idea that was sort of maybe germinating. And the day after the election, I just wanted to get people together to, like, you know, just sort of cope and provide some emotional support to one another. And one of the things that always brings people together is food. You know, if you're sharing food, you can't really hate somebody. And so that was how the Together Seville potlucks were born. And so every Sunday for about 6 months, we did potlucks. And you know, from a peak of 110, 120 people to, you know, toward the end of the weekly potlucks, we had maybe 30 or 40 a week, which is still a nice turnout. But it was clear that the acute phase was starting to pass by May or so. And so we backed off on the weekly potlucks. We do them monthly now. In fact, we have one tonight, so I'll put an early plug in for that. Together Seville's monthly potluck is tonight at the Ix Art Park in the indoor event space, 5:30 to 7 p.m., 5:30 food, 6 o'clock some talking, and debrief from yesterday as well as strategizing for next steps. So we started doing potlucks and organizing a lot of people and developed a whole steering committee to really kind of try and pull this together. And so we've tried to serve as a conduit and an information hub for actions going on in town, calling lawmakers, and so on and so forth. The mission really is, and you said this at the top of the show, to work to ensure that everybody in our community is safe, secure, heard, and has access to resources, and to build political power to do that, too. We're not a direct services organization. We're trying to build political power. And we do all that for, like, this really basic reason. It's so that everybody can lead flourishing and meaningful lives, right? When we have a leadership in Washington that is so driven by graft and greed and corruption and just thirst for power, that is their ideology. That plus stick it to the liberals. Mm-hmm. And so that ideology leads to pain and suffering and killing people and destroying the planet. And we're very much opposed to all those things. And so
I'll say that Together Seville was very much a part of the strength behind Seville community. We went to their meetings, we looked at their structure, and we asked for their support. We got their support. Every week I would say, you know, this is what we're doing this week. Can you help us, to the people who were at the potluck? And so many people, I don't even know how many volunteers we had for the March for Science. I wish I could tell you, but so much support came from knowing what you guys had done and how you had done it, and then also using your group as a resource for ours.
Glad we could help.
Yes, it was great.
Well, and so what we're trying to do then, quickly, and honestly, in the first couple of weeks, I would have been happy to sort of turn things over to somebody else doing it, honestly, you know. But I didn't find another, like, really broad-based progressive group locally that was trying to connect those dots. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, part of what we're doing is trying to connect the dots and be some of the sinews and I don't know, connective tissue between these various really, really important issue-based groups, really, really important activist groups like Indivisible, like Surge, like Community, and others that are on the ground and doing a lot of important work as well. So what can we do to bring all that together and make the sum more than the parts?
20 minutes past the hour. After the break, we'll talk more about local resistance organizations, Seville Community, and Together Seville. You are listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. We're back with Joanna Lott from Seville Community and Nathan Moore from Together Seville. We're talking about the role that everyday people are playing in resisting the Trump agenda. I want to take you both back to election night, 2016 in November. We were all prepared to have the first woman president of the United States, the leader of the free world, would finally be a woman. We were all charged up for it. All the polls said it was going to happen, and then it didn't. How did you feel that night? When did you first realize on that night that it wasn't going to be Hillary and that Trump was going to take the presidency?
I realized early on that I couldn't sit through it, that it was looking bad. And I, my brother and my mother were watching in the living room, and I excused myself and went to my room and tried to distract myself with things like watching The Walking Dead and, you know, just really big distractions from it. But somehow, you know, there was really no way to get away from what we were looking at happening. And at the same time, it was surreal. And I think that in a way, it's been a recovery from that trauma. There's all the things that you have to deal with every day, what he's done and what he's tweeted and the things he's said and the actions that he's taking to destroy the planet and to make all of the other countries in the world angry with us. And all of the brutal, scary truths that we face with his actions every day. And then there's just the fact that that was one of the worst nights, maybe the worst night of my life. I've never felt, you know, I've worked with men like him. I temped a lot when I lived in New York City, and I worked in big corporations, and I got treated the way I know that he treats women. And that was a big part of my emotions on election night, was knowing that someone like that, who has so little regard for women and had no intention of making things better for us or even keeping things as good as they are, that was just so hard to deal with. And luckily, I have something that I call sleep stress narcolepsy, where I tend to fall asleep when I get super stressed. It's only happened one other time, and that was when we bombed Afghanistan. And when Bush came on television and talked about that, I just fell asleep. So I did actually have a good night's sleep that night, unlike most people in the country. But the worst part was waking up, because I didn't know for sure. I had a pretty strong feeling, but when I woke up, I had to, you know, go hear the news. And I was a zombie that day. I don't know, you know, I couldn't talk about it at work with my friends who felt the same way. We sort of had to make an agreement that we wouldn't talk about it, because all we could say was, I know, I know, I know. Otherwise, it was too upsetting. And then I see patients all day, and who knows who they voted for and what their feelings are. So I don't want to be expressing anything at work. And that was really hard. And that, you know, zombie phase lasted a good couple weeks before I felt, and I may have said earlier that, you know, on election day, I was ready to act. But I think it took a couple of weeks for me to even pull myself together into a state that I could begin to function.
Nathan?
I don't remember the exact minute. I think it was somewhere along the way when Wisconsin was clearly not going to turn. I actually was following Wisconsin really closely, because it was a bit of a linchpin in this whole thing at the time. And I used to live in Wisconsin. I lived in Madison for 7 or 8 years. And I know the kind of, like, you know, when you look at, like, certain counties, they're the bellwether counties of Wisconsin voting. I'm like, oh, that's where this is going. So, yeah, it was right around that time. I definitely was in turmoil at night, knew I had to do something. My wife kind of talked me down some at the moment, because, you know, it's 2 a.m. and nothing was going to change at 2 a.m. By 10 o'clock the next morning, I had started Together Seville. Because I don't know what to do except get a microphone and talk to people. And so that's what we did.
My wife said I didn't smile for 2 weeks after election mm-hmm. night. And I think she's probably right. I mean, it was very upsetting.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people probably didn't smile.
Joanna, you mentioned women's rights earlier. Why do you think so many women voted for Trump? Even, you know, even after he openly admitted on live camera that he was sexually abusive toward women, why do you think he got so many women to vote for him? What is going on there?
Well, and this has been one of the most upsetting things I've had to realize since the election. And I've been very in the dark. And I guess I've been lucky to live in a society, in my society, growing up, in my culture, with my family and my friends, where women were respected. But I can't say that I lived outside of the big culture, where a woman's self-worth is very much dependent on being attractive to men. And I think that there is a culture of, well, first of all, let me say, I think it was mainly, the problem was white women, right? It was mostly, I think that black women, Latino women voted for Clinton, not all of them, but that white women were more, they went with party lines. And my, what I wonder, and I've read some editorials asking the same question, is that were the women who dismissed Trump's treatment of women as just the way men are, had they also defended a man in their life who has done the same thing? And was that their norm? And also, there's just tremendous competition among women against each other. And that's a big part of how we grow up is, do I look better? Am I the prettiest girl in the room? Do I look better? Is that man going to like me? And so the misogyny that we think of as being a purely male trait actually goes much deeper than that and is, I think, a much bigger problem. And I had never noticed it. And it's you know, there's so many things I've woken up to since Election Day.
I want to ask you, and I think the question, I think I know what you were each going to say, but do you believe that Trump symbolizes the darker, greedier side of America? Nathan, we'll start with you.
Oh,
this
he
time.
Represents the collective id of America. Right. Everything that is sort of this raw, greed-based, power-based, authoritarian-based awfulness distilled into one figure. I mean, I don't mean that. I literally don't mean this as a personal attack. He may be friendly to some people in his life. I'll give him that. Mm-hmm. But as far as what he represents, the symbol, yeah. And his actions, as far as business and politics go, yeah. I mean, it's all about greed and power and supremacy, domination. And so, you know, his supporters are people who often have an authoritarian mindset of their own to some extent. But that has been really expanded to where it's threatening certain core parts of our democracy.
Joanna, anything to add there?
Nothing to add. I mean, I just totally agree with what Nathan said.
And Joanna, I think you touched on this a little bit more, but I'd like to talk a little bit more about this. Progressives have accepted conservative presidents in the past. You both, I think, mentioned that. What makes this time so different? Why the rise of the resistance this time?
It's funny, real quick, just a semantics thing. It's the term resistance is quirky. I feel like being labeled resistance does a disservice to the real resistance movements in the past in different countries where it's been seriously like life and death stuff. I mean, I go to work, I drive my car on the streets, I go to the store without being accosted. You know, I don't feel that. I'm right. Glad for what I'm doing. But right. But anyway, besides that, why this time is because... honestly, because this is extreme. And it's not just because the niceties of government are being sort of throttled. It's also because the actual policies that are being pursued or being suggested are really, really horrible for, millions and millions of people. For healthcare to be thrown out, to be denied to healthcare access, rather, to be denied to millions of Americans, for people to be rounded up indiscriminately and deported if they don't have papers, for people to be attacked on the street by those who are emboldened by Trump's white supremacist leanings. These are really troubling times for America, and not just because Trump's a Republican or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's because of where the country actually is headed and could go. We have right now, and this is sort of the part of this that I think needs to happen, is that we know that right now in Washington, both houses of Congress and the presidency and effectively the judiciary are dominated by Republicans, lawmakers in Congress, Trump and his curious band of unfortunates in the executive, and then now with the latest Supreme Court approval, the judiciary. So we know that coming from Washington, we're just going to have sort of a river of filth, a river of sort of crap coming our way. The machine is going to produce that river of filth. And so what Together Seville is, what I've talked about Together Seville doing, and what I know like the folks at Indivisible are trying to do, sort of laser focused on the national, is just throw sand in the gears of that machine. slow the gears down or stop them if we can, you know, throw the wrenches in. And so that's why the calls to lawmakers each day. That's why the protests at Garrett's office, et cetera. Simultaneously, in addition to trying to, you know, throw sand in the gears, Together Seville is also about trying to build a bulwark locally and in Virginia, a bulwark and a fortress that can stop some of that river, that can keep it from coming. And then to make what's inside our bulwark as meaningful and as flourishing as we can, full of, you know, justice and equity. And the thing is, it's all rooted in a politics of empathy. And so if we can build that bulwark and make it great, then great.
31 minutes past the hour. Joanna Lott from Seville Community and Nathan Moore from Together Seville with us this morning. We're talking about the resistance. You are listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm sorry I cut you off there, Nathan.
It's okay.
Yeah. Joanna, anything you wanted to add to that? Why this time? Why not when the Bush government was elected? Why this time?
Well, I think that definitely, you know, Nathan covered it really well, and I think that the attacks on women's health, on I just feel like we're sliding backwards. I feel like any of the progress that has been made is in jeopardy of disappearing and moving backwards, and in some cases really, really far backwards. When you look at how science is being attacked and disregarded, and how the environment, you know, we're basically looking at throwing all the science out the window. I think that even scientists who may have been more inclined to stay quiet in the past have become active and involved.
If I could actually add one more thing, too, I think besides the science and women's right health and all the rest are crazy important issues to many, many people. I think there's an even broader thing as well that, you know, American democracy, we assume will always be here, and we assume will always be robust and strong. And if Trump were actually more ideological towards fascism, he could do that. He's not. He just seems to be motivated primarily by greed. So that's kind of where we end up. We end up with, like, you know, grifter president. But I think there's a real concern this time around that it's, you know, even W, for all my serious, serious beefs with W, still basically played by the same playbook. You know, I mean, he filled his posts with, you know, Darth Vader characters like Dick Cheney, but he still played the game in more or less the way the game is played. Up to and including imperialist wars that the United States has had a century of history of. But Trump is a different game, and he's throwing out a lot of the rules that have made democracy, with all its flaws in the American deployment of democracy, he's throwing out a lot of those rules that have made it function and that have made space for civil society and for movements to flourish and for any kind of people before profit policies to have ever come into place. And so that's sort of like an existential threat to what we know and hope America can be.
Now, conservatives haven't won the popular vote at the presidency level in over a decade. Do either of you think that America as a whole is becoming more progressive?
I think it depends on what you're talking about. First of all, I think you point out something good here. It's like if in two of the last five presidential elections, the person who didn't win the popular vote won the presidency, we need to come up with something else besides the term democracy for it. But that's neither here nor there. As far as it goes, I think when it comes to let's talk about social issues and economic issues. On social issues, yes. I think that's almost unquestionable, the degree to which America is becoming more kind of left of positions it used to be, or more progressive on positions it used to be, or more liberal. We'll use the word liberal on those positions. The idea that all people are equal, you know, that they all have equal rights. Well, yeah. I mean, like, you'd be hard-pressed to find people that would say no to that these days. The idea that gays and lesbians are full members of society and should enjoy the same full rights that the rest of us do. Yes, that's you know, lots more people are saying things like this. And that there's a place that for immigrants to be at home in America and being a part of this country and you know, adding to it. There's a lot more people that will say yes to that. That said, on economic issues, I'm not so sure. There's always been a real tension in America. We don't talk about social class very much. We don't talk about economic class that much in America. And I feel like we need to bring that economic justice lens to things more. I do feel like, especially among the young people, and you saw this with the Bernie Sanders campaign, where he actually was talking about economic justice issues, things like living wage, things like universal access to health care, things like housing and education, that are all economic justice issues and enjoyed enormous support among young people, younger people, the sort of under 35, under 40 set. And I think you're going to see that more and more as the right has demonized everything to the left of Barack Obama as socialism, actually to the left of like John McCain as socialism. All of a sudden, all these people look around saying, well, socialism doesn't sound so bad. It's not really like what a European would call socialism. It's basically social democratic policies like FDR. But you find now in surveys that more young people are in favor of socialism than capitalism. I mean, not by a lot, but yeah. And so I think there is the potential for it to become more genuinely progressive. I'm not sure if we're there yet.
It's hard not to wonder, with the tremendous backlash and the development of the resistance and the mobilizing of all these liberal ideas, where were all these people on Election Day? What happened? Did we all just sit back and think it was a lockdown for Hillary, and was it voter turnout? Why do you think, if all what you're saying is true, if we are becoming more progressive in some ways, and if the resistance seems to be clear proof of that, where were all those people on Election Day?
Well, I, for one, really didn't think it was going to be a problem. I thought that it was an obvious win for Clinton. And but again, I should say, you know, one of the reasons I haven't chimed in on the last couple of questions is that I am really new to all of this, and I don't have the background to answer some of these questions with the aptitude that Nathan does. but I'm proud of the fact that I have done as much work as I have in the last 6 months to 7 months to become as aware and informed as I am. But so I don't know a lot about what happened before Election Day, because I didn't feel like I had to care that much. And that's a problem. I think that's a big problem in our society. And I know a lot of friends who are feeling the same way that I am. Like, how has my head been in the sand for so long? And why is it just now, when we're facing this terrible situation, that I am beginning to care and get involved? And I wonder if that's part of the answer, that we just felt, and I did get super lazy during the Obama administration, because I did feel secure that he did so many things that were good, and there were problems. Obviously, he wasn't the best president ever, but he was really good, and I didn't feel scared when he was president, and I feel scared every day now. But to your question, I have no idea.
Well, I just want to applaud the work you have done in the last 6 months.
Thank you.
Like,
Thank you.
We're all new to certain things in our lives, and you're hitting in your stride and more, and it's fantastic to see you and all these groups in Charlottesville and beyond flourish and really have an impact, I think.
Thank you.
The wins are sometimes, the wins feel like they're not enough sometimes, but we
sometimes.
Keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But we keep doing it and accumulate it, and it'll make a difference, a big difference, hopefully. Mm-hmm. To try and answer the question, I think the other thing we need to remember here is that somehow the Democratic Party, and look, I'm not a Hillary Clinton hater. I don't like her as much as other politicians. But, you know, the Democratic Party did somehow manage to pick a candidate that was only slightly less reviled than Donald Trump.
True.
Among a large swath of the American electorate. And so it was not and her message was very technocratic, and the solutions were very well researched, but it was very technocratic kind of stuff, and nothing that sort of resonated on an emotional level with a lot of voters in states that are economically distressed, and certainly not in some of the really right-wing states where I think, you know, racism did play a factor. There's just so many post-election debriefs or postmortems or whatever. I don't want to like necessarily weigh in on all that, but I mean the fact is that yeah, partly it was turnout, partly it was you know sort of racism motivating it, partly it was economic concerns motivating it. It was like sort of all of the above.
And I did kind of want to survey the people at the rally yesterday, the protesters, and say, did you guys all vote? Was everyone out? Did everyone show up?
19 minutes before the hour after the break, we'll talk about what Seville Community and Together Seville have planned for the future. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Stream us online at 947wpvc.org or on your mobile device via TuneIn. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Please stay with us. We're back with Joanna Lott and Nathan Moore talking about the resistance, everyday people in the resistance. I'd like to move on now and talk more about your individual organizations. Joanna, you're here with Seville Community, and I'm not sure if I pronounce that the way it's written.
Yeah, we call it community. Yeah. The UNI is the, actually, it's interesting. The reason that the UNI is capitalized in community is that all of us are from UVA, and we're all from the university. I work at the university. They're all PhD students at the university, as I understand it. And so UVA is not, what am I trying to say? We're not endorsed by UVA. We're not a UVA-affiliated group, is what I'm trying to say. But we all happen to be there, and we wish that more people at the university could become more active and would become more active and feel comfortable with it. It's difficult because you can't really talk about it at work. That's why the UNI is capitalized.
So there's some bullet points on your Facebook page that I'd like to just have you
expand. Yes, so many.
Yes, expand on. Let's just do a few here. No human is illegal. What do you mean by that?
I think kind of a common thing you'll see on people's pages. No human is illegal. Being a human, we should be taking care of each other, whether you were born here, moved here illegally. You are not illegal. You are a human being, and you deserve respect and care. And so I think that speaks to the Muslim ban and the refugee crisis, and we're just trying to make sure that people feel welcome.
All right, so I'm just picking some that I like here.
Okay.
Science determines facts.
Yes. So I think that, you know, again, that's these are all in reaction to what we're seeing happen. And what we're seeing is that science is being rejected, that they're throwing out the idea that the fact that people affect climate, that climate change is occurring because of people, is being rejected now, and for the benefit of large corporations and basically greed. And you can't, there's very little in life that doesn't depend on evidence. And we want to know that if we're making policy decisions in Washington, that they're being based on scientific fact.
Some of these points seem so obvious, but they still need to be said. And
sure,
that's a sad part of our society today. You have women's rights are human rights.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think this was even a slogan in, I'm not sure where it originated, but maybe Hillary Clinton said it, or I'm not sure, but it's so true. I mean, it is obvious, and it's infuriating that we have to fight for it. But it's obvious. We are human, and we deserve the same things as men, and it's simple. Should be.
The Earth is our future.
Yes, well, where would we be without it?
I particularly like that one because I think one of the things that's most shocking to me is the dismantling of the EPA.
Right.
In not such incremental amounts sometimes, it seems. And so I was really glad to see that. Love is love.
And I believe this comes from a Lin-Manuel Miranda quote that he gave at the Tony Awards, where he talked about, I think he ended his speech by saying, love is love is love is love is love is love is love, and went on. And it was very moving. And what it means is that if you love someone and have a relationship with them, it has no... who they, what their sex is, how they identify as, what their gender identity is doesn't matter. Love is love. We can't get in the way of people's love with politics, and yet that's what is trying to happen and happen so much in society.
And I'm just going to do one more. You have quite a few of these, but I also like this one, Black Lives Matter. I know that has become a bit of a cliche now.
Mm-hmm.
And I assume you mean it doesn't just mean black lives. It means all peoples of color.
It does. It means all peoples of color. But I think that there are lots of problems with that phrase, and I've heard lots of criticisms of it. But I think that I don't know if I'm qualified to speak to it in much depth, but I think that it came out of a need for the recognition, again, which should be so obvious, that black lives do matter. Like, how is it necessary to say that? How is it even necessary to say black lives matter? It should be so under, it should just be an understanding that you have and that you carry with you. And I think that our group, like a lot of groups in the beginning, we tried to do too much. We have all of these things on our website because they are what we believe, but we have honed in on more of a scientific bent now. And that is because there are groups like Together Seville that direct you to the right group and to where you need to be and who you think you'll do the best service for. Or with. So our group is taking more of a niche approach, and we're going to be doing more science education and outreach, helping keep science in the forefront of people's minds, help them understand why rejecting science is so dangerous to our future.
Okay, Nathan, I'm going to do the same to you. Some points from your website. Organizing for Justice and Mutual Support.
Yes, that was kind of like Joanna. I realized that some of the phrases on our website were written really in the days, literally, right after the election. And so that one, though, is still very much legit. Organizing for Mutual Support speaks to that acute phase back in November, December, January, and still beyond, though, you know, for times like now, the day after the KKK rally in downtown Charlottesville, where people are still sort of reeling from that and the emotions of that and trying to process the feelings of that, and some people dealing with the trauma of that. And so that kind of mutual support, come out to the potluck tonight, 5:30 to 7 at the XR Park. But also very much organizing for justice. And so the idea here is that we are organizing for political power around issues of justice and equity, not just, it's not a direct services thing. We're not just sort of like trying to create discourse. We're organizing for power. And so, and for policies that follow from that, and candidates that will do the things that you know, make our society better.
Just coming up on 10 minutes before the hour, Joanna Lott from Seville Community and Nathan Moore from Together Seville with us this morning to talk about the resistance and the role of everyday people. You are listening to 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. Nathan, talk a little bit about the Charlottesville People's Summit that you held in
A month ago.
June, right?
Yeah, it was about a month ago this weekend, actually. Charlottesville People's Summit was held locally at the same time as the just People's Summit in Chicago, a big national People's Summit that they did out in Chicago. I think we might have been the only satellite event, actually, but it was an idea that Walt Heineke had from EPIC, the Equity and Progress in Charlottesville group. And he said, hey, y'all want to, you know, work together on this? I was like, yeah, let's do it. And so we did our local version of it. And so we brought together a lot of local organizations and activists, people who could speak to particular issues like affordable housing, like criminal justice reform, like living wage, to have workshops and breakouts, like racial justice. So the Black Lives Matters, very new Charlottesville chapter came out and was part of that. Surge came out and was part of that. And we had progressive candidates for office, some that we invited. Tom Pieriello came out. And then we capped off the night with a really nice, well, two ways we capped off the night. One was sort of like, you know, what's next? You know, sort of concrete steps we can take to sort of organize across lines that have divided us for so long. You know, Together Seville, we can't overnight break down the barriers that have separated various groups. We can try over time to pull things together and to build relationships with groups as far ranging as FAR to Sinbarreras to the immigrant resource communities, to like the environmental justice groups, you know, walking the line, to all kinds of groups that are, you know, really trying to push it out. I don't mean to do a laundry list here, but you know, really trying to bring groups together around issues of some shared concern. The People's Summit was very good for that. And we capped it off with actually Bernie Sanders giving his speech at the Chicago People's Summit that night, you know, talking about the big picture issues, you know, what comes next.
It was a really great event. I was there. I volunteered just to sign people in. And one of the things I loved about it was the breakout sessions where we got to discuss issues of our choice. And there it was very hard to choose because they were all so good, led by people from the community and coming up with concrete ideas of how and steps to take. I strongly encourage you, if you haven't been to a potluck, and I know I'm speaking for your group now, but we don't compete, that we work together. Go to the potluck tonight. I think it's going to be really interesting what people have to say. And also because what Together Seaville does really well is come up with ideas for what to do next. And that's so imperative as we face activism burnout and question how we're making an impact and if we're making an impact, to come together and have our little meeting that can be just a good for your soul, but also really good for what to do next.
I should say, too, that so we do events like the People's Summit and like the potlucks to bring people together, right? The other main way that most people sort of touch the organization, if you will, or interact with Together Seaville is through our website. We keep a sort of political and activist events calendar at togetherseaville.net. You can also read our platform there. And so there's the calendar there. We also do an email, twice a week email, sort of actions and newsletter email that comes out every Monday morning and every Thursday morning. And so that's daily actions, and everything from, you know, calling lawmakers to showing up at a protest. And then also to try and include some articles in there, some good reading to help inspire for the week and weekend. And I always include a song as well, some kind of song, because culture is part of this whole thing, brings us together and helps us connect in ways that just a bunch of text doesn't always.
Now, one thing that you do, Nathan, on your site that I don't think Joanna does on her site is you endorse specific politicians.
We did do that this time. We did that for the primary. We'll do it again for the general election. I think for the general election, so this time we followed the lead of some other organizations and also had our own platform and kind of checked off, you know, enough of the based on what we knew of the candidates. We got a little bit of pushback from some candidates who, you know, thought they should have been endorsed. And so we're going to simply do questionnaires this time and make it a little bit better as a process for endorsements. But, yeah, here's the thing. It's not I don't think it's enough to just sort of in the long run, and as an organization, I don't think we will be fulfilling enough of what we do if we sort of talk about the issues and just sort of have people call and host workshops to inform people about things and all that. I think also really we're trying to build power, and political power includes elected officers, elected officials. And so, one of our steering committee members is running for school board in the county, Mary McIntyre. You know, we have other candidates who we feel a great deal of political alignment with and feel confident that they would carry out a lot of a shared vision for what a better Charlottesville and a better state and a better society looks like.
All right. Excuse me. One more for you. Create a civic circle.
Oh, yeah, we kind of de-emphasized that a little bit, but the idea is basically it's a buddy system. If you're activated and you want to do something next, and you feel like, oh, my God, how can I make any difference? You can make a difference by certainly making the calls and showing up to actions, but also by telling your friends and getting them to do the same and kind of holding each other accountable to each other and providing support to each other. The idea is to make this sort of decentralized network of people who will all support one another in this process, because it's a long haul. It's a long haul, and we need each other for it. And so Together tries to do that. We also try and provide what we can in terms of resources to enable you all to do all that, if you're listening.
Just a minute or so to go. The time has gone by so quickly here this morning with both of you here. Thank you so much for coming in. If people want to get involved in your organizations, how do they find you on the web? What can they do? How can they get connected? Joanna, you can go first.
It's pretty easy for us. Just go to Facebook and search Seaville Community with a capital UNI in the community, and you'll find our Facebook page. All of our events are listed there, and they'd kill me if I didn't let you guys all know what we have coming up. We have our first science pub night Our Ian Glomsky from Vitae Distillery will talk about the science of distillery. So this is going to be a fun science night. It's September 22nd at Vitae Spirits. Time to be determined, probably 7 to 8.
Okay, Nathan, how do people get in touch with you if they want to be part of your group?
Sure. The easiest way is togetherseville.net. There's a sign up for the twice weekly email there. We don't spam you. We send 2, maybe 3 messages a week. It's togetherseville.net. You can also just, if you don't want the emails, you can still go and browse the calendar. You can also find us on Facebook at togetherseville. And, of course, the potluck tonight, which we've mentioned before, but if you're just tuning in, it's tonight from 5:30 to 7 down at the Ixart Park, sharing food and debriefing from yesterday's rally at the Justice Park, and also figuring out next steps, what we do next as to build political power.
Again, thank you both so much for coming in, and I hope you will keep in touch, and I hope you'll come see us again soon.
Thank you.
Thanks.
This and every episode of The Wake Up Call is available on demand at cvillepodcast.com. Join us next Sunday at 11 a.m. when Rick Moore's guest will be Professor Philip Potter from the University of Virginia's Department of Politics. He'll be talking about the Trump administration's foreign policy. Coming up at noon on 94.7 WPVC, it's El Club del Sabor. For the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, I'm Dan Gould. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.